If you want your grill to sparkle like no other, and you want to learn how to build an amazing culture in your company, then you're going to want to listen to this show.
This is Jake Stenzino, host of Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, trying to get it together this morning, my friend. Help me out here a little bit, bro. Help me out.
Hey, all I'm going to say is, you know, according to my wife, nothing smells better than a can of WD-40. And today's guest just so happens to be the chairman and CEO of WD-40 Company. He also co-authored the book, Helping People Win at Work. He has invaluable experience incorporating company culture and values into the day-to-day operations and collaborating with business partners throughout the world. So without further ado, Gary Ridge, welcome to the show.
G'day, Jake. G'day, Gina. Good to be with you guys this morning. And let me give you my official introduction, if I may. Can I do that?
Please, absolutely. Please.
Yeah, g'day. I'm Gary Ridge. I'm the consciously incompetent, probably wrong, and roughly right chairman of WD-40 Company.
Wonderful. And Gino couldn't turn a computer on today. So, you know, we got a bunch of really smart folks in the room. I'm excited about this one. Gary, I'm thrilled. I've been using WD-40 ever since I was a little kid. And we'll get into some questions on that in a minute, putting on, you know, the bike chain. I think that's where everyone starts their experience with WD-40 is putting it on the bike chain. But what I want to hear from you specifically, how did you get involved with the company? And then tell us about your time as the leader. And ultimately, how you landed the role. I'd love to hear that story.
By accident, by singing Timey Kangaroo Down Sport on a tour bus, probably. But all jokes aside, I'm from Sydney, Australia. I was working for the licensee of WD-40 in Australia back in the 80s. And through that relationship, I got to know the people at WD-40 here in the United States. And back then, the company was probably $90 million in turnover globally. It was primarily a U.S. brand. There were sprinkles of the brand around the world. And in 1987, around that time, the leaders of the company said, we believe there's a market bigger than the U.S. outside of the U.S., and we'd like to explore that. So I was working for the licensee. The license was coming to an end. I got a call from the then president of the company, who I'd met several times on trips to the U.S., and he said, hey, you know, we really believe that there's an opportunity around the world for the brand. Would you like to join us and open our Australian subsidiary and help us, you know, determine what the opportunities were in Asia Pacific? I'd done a fair bit of work up in Asia with the company I'd worked with. My dad was an engineer. He worked for the same company for 50 years from when he was 15 to when he was 65 years old. And I said to Dad, hey, WD-40 want me to go and work for them. What do you think? And he said, you can't go wrong with that stuff, son. So number one lesson in life is listen to Dad. So I joined them in 87 with a fax machine under my bed. I opened the Australian subsidiary on January 1st, 1988. I worked in out of Sydney, primarily in Asia from 88 through to 94. In 94, I was having a conversation with the same guy, my boss. I said, Jerry, is there anything else you'd like me to do? He said, funny, you should ask. Do you want to move to the US? I said, to do what? He said, to help us take the blue and yellow can with a little red top to the world. I said, that sounds like a pretty good idea. Who else would not want to uproot their family and travel 8,000 miles across the world to a country they'd never lived in before? But we did it. 3 years later, he retired. And for some reason, the board of directors thought this Aussie bloke might be okay to lead the company into the future. I was scared, but not afraid. I thought, how do we do this? We're about $100 million in revenue at that time. 85% of our business was in the US. So I went back to school. I needed to understand how you could empower people to be great. So I did my master's in leadership. That's where I met my mentor, my co-author, my friend, Dr. Ken Blanchard. He's 83 years old now. We see each other very often. He's a dear friend. And I really learned the power of servant leadership. And I knew that we had one secret formula, and that was the secret formula of WD-40, the product. But the other secret formula was the people. How do we unlock the will of the people. And that's what we've done for the last 25 years. If you fast forward now, we sell that blue and yellow can with a little red top in 176 countries around the world. 80% of our business is outside of the United States, revenue north of 500 and so million, 93% employee engagement. And if you happen to be an investor, compounded annual growth rate of total shareholder return over that 25-year period of about 14%. If you would have invested $100 in 1998, that $100 last week was worth $1,796.32. And all we do is sell oil in a can.
Keep it simple, Gino.
I can't even hit the record button, so you got to try to keep it really simple for me. Gary, you just said you were scared but not afraid. What do you mean by that?
Well, I was scared in that I didn't understand completely how you could build a culture in an organization and do it globally. I wasn't afraid of doing it, but scared to me was I didn't know how. And that's why I looked around and I went back to school. Here I was already the CEO of a US public company. And I went back to school and did a master's degree in leadership because I really felt that it was unlocking the power of the people. It's all about the people. And I'm glad I did that. And in fact, the program that I did, I loved it so much. Over the last 25 years, we've sent north of 30 people through that master's degree at the University of San Diego. And it's, you know, this is not a certificate program. This is a fair dinkum master's degree. It takes 2 years to do it. It's a lot of work, but it really does teach you the power of unlocking the will of the
This is a degree with actual value is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Gary, what was the conversation with your spouse and kids like when you told them, hey, I'm going to move 8,000 miles. We're going to uproot ourselves. We're going to go someplace that we've never been before. How did that conversation go?
My son said he was kind of into baseball and he said, oh, that's pretty cool, Dad. it was, it was an experience. You know, a good friend of mine, Whitney Johnson, talks about the S-curve and how in life your true learning experiences come where you truly disrupt yourself. And we truly disrupted ourselves. I it's interesting because you would think that the Australian culture and the US culture are pretty similar. You know, we nearly talk the same language, but there's so many differences. You know, simple, you drive on the wrong side of the road. You know, I had to get used to that. You walk on the wrong side of the street, so you keep running into people. You know, there's so many things that we learned from doing that. So it was an experience, certainly. And, I would encourage people, disrupt yourself. It's the best way to learn.
How do you get people to come to work loving their job?
Well, imagine a place where you go to work every day. You make a contribution to something bigger than yourself. So there's a true purpose. You learn something new. So there's an organization that creates this learning environment. You're protected and you're set free by a compelling set of values. And you go home happy. And why that's important is happy people create happy families. Happy families create happy communities. Happy communities create a happy world. And we damn well need a happy world. So our job as leaders is, what's the purpose? If you think about WD-40 company, Jake, Gino, if I was to ask you, what business do you think we're in? What would you say?
I'm going to say the happiness business after this. I thought it was the quasi oil business, but I guess it's the happiness business.
We're in the memories business.
That's
if close. You ask, yeah. So we exist. Why do we go to work every day? We exist to create positive, lasting memories, solving problems in factories, homes, and workshops around the world. We solve problems and we create opportunities. Our just cause as we call ourselves a tribe because one of the biggest desires we have as human beings is to belong. And unfortunately, a lot of organizations create these cultures where people don't feel like they belong. They have this person as their leader. This is Al, the soul-sucking CEO.
Blood on his chops.
Well, he's just got a big mouth. But
okay.
But they don't create this place where people feel that they belong. So at our organization, we want people to belong. And if you create that environment of a true purpose and a sense of belonging, you create a place where people actually want to go to work each day. And 97% of our people say they love to tell people they work at our company. 97% globally.
And how long did it take you to flush out the core values, the mission statement, the community beliefs?
3 to 5 years. You know, we started off, this wasn't a Gary design. I planted the seed and I asked people to help me, you know, water the seed to grow this, if you will, tree of culture, values, and behaviors. So, you know, if you think about a tribe, the number one responsibility of a tribal leader is to be a learner and a teacher. If you were to go back thousands of years and observe some of the Indigenous Australians at a tribal meeting, what would the elder tribe member be doing? They'd be teaching the younger tribe members to throw a boomerang. Why? The boomerang was the tool of survival. What does that lesson tell you? Our job as leaders is to be learners and teachers and to help those that we lead step into the best version of their personal self. And unfortunately, sometimes we try to protect our own comfort at the expense of someone else's growth. It's not comfortable being in that position. You have to love your people enough to reward them and applaud them for doing great work. But then you have to be brave enough. And this is where the rub is. You have to be brave enough to be able to redirect them as their coach to help them get an A, to help them win their game. And a lot of people protect their own comfort zone at the expense of someone else's growth.
But isn't it also difficult? You need to be transparent. You need to be vulnerable. You need to be authentic. Aren't those a lot of the qualities that a leader needs? And sometimes we fall short on that.
Oh, yeah. If you think about Al, you know, Al, the soul-sucking CEO, his ego eats his empathy instead of his empathy eating his ego. He's a micromanager. He thinks micromanagement is essential. He thinks he's corporate royalty. You know, he's climbed up the corporate ladder and he's now at the top. Thou shalt bow down to Al. He loves a fear-based culture. He's a know-it-all. He has all the answers. He thinks learning is for losers. He must always be right. He hates feedback and he doesn't follow through on his commitments. There's the attributes of a leader that creates a toxic culture.
As you're saying that, every profession, I'm writing it down, has these soul-sucking people, whether they're doctors who are at the top of their game, that they know it all, they can't take any advice. There's attorneys who have that. So it's not just CEOs. And
every service-based company in the U.S. from like the telecom, you mentioned Verizon before. So many of these companies, like you deal with them. And then now the team members that they have working for them want to dictate to you what it is and have zero service at all. It's so transparent at times.
But it's not their fault. It's not their fault. It's
trickle down tyranny.
It's what I call the quack quack syndrome. That's not our policy. Quack quack. We're not allowed to quack quack. And then you eventually get to the head mallard. Quack quack quack. Like, let's stop quacking and let's stop giving people.
It's worse than that now, though, Gary. They're like a lot of these kids that you're running into at these stores and these service related companies are dictating to you how things are going to go. And it's not even close to service. They're telling you, and that they have a sense of authority and power. It's kind of gross.
Well,
I've experienced it over the last few years even more, ever since COVID.
But that's not their fault. They're a shadow of the leadership.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. You know, if you think about the opposite of Al, you know, the servant leader, they love and involve their people. They're always in servant leadership mode. They are expected to be competent. They are connected with emotional intelligence to their people. They love learning moments. They have a heart of gold and a backbone of steel. They're champions of hope. They know micromanagement is not scalable. They do what they say they're going to do, and they treasure the gift of feedback. And, you know, I say Al, the soul-sucking CEO, as you said, Jake, this could be Al, the soul-sucking leader, the soul-sucking anything, because his ego or her ego is eating the empathy instead of the empathy eating the ego.
I really want to make a little joke here. I don't know how it's going to come off, Jake and Gary, but if you give me like give me like 30
Just let
seconds.
Let it rip, Gina. Let it rip.
If you give me like 30 seconds on this, the state of our political system in the United States is what's in disarray. There are no leaders right now. It's all about ego. It's all about empathy. So what Gary is discussing to me, I'm looking at the incompetence and no one's a growth. I mean, our vice president can't say three sentences without looking incompetent. Is there a growth mindset there? Or I'm looking at the leadership of all levels, either party. And it's just like they're not going for the best person for that job. And to me,
because the ego's eating the empathy, Gino.
Yeah,
a lot of ego at a lot of levels.
I'm saying to myself, there's something going on here. And it's not just, we always think about it from the corporate perspective, from companies, whether it's Starbucks or Apple or all these other iconic companies. But let's rip it down to, you know, the public entities as far as public government, what's going on. I think Florida is doing a great job. I'm down here. We had a hurricane. 3 days later, DeSantis builds a bridge and 99.9% of the people have power here. That's what a leader does. I mean, he's quietly, has no ego. He gets the job done. So I don't know if you want to add to that, Gary, but I see that as being the problem in politics and in governance right now, because there is a ton of ego and there's a ton of incompetence that follows that ego.
Well, you know, I'm not going to get into politics because it's all about leadership at any level. And, you know, I can't change the ego of politicians. But what we can do is business today has the biggest opportunity ever to make a positive difference in the world. And how do we do that? By creating cultures where people are treated with respect and dignity. They're given the opportunity to learn. That, you know, the trust is put in place. There's clear vision to what success looks like, and we get up every day helping people win. I mean, that's our job. I mean, I listen to the talking heads on TV every morning or whatever, and they get up to rip everybody down. Why do we want to rip everybody down? You know, life is a gift. Don't send it back unwrapped. And we got to do a lot of unwrapping here, because people, you know, it's not a game of ego. It's a game of empathy and helping people win. That's what we need to do.
Gary, I'm going to jump in for just a second, Gino. You've mentioned a lot on the ego and the empathy. Did you struggle with that early in your career? Or maybe touch on that a little bit, because it seems to be a hot button for you. I'd love to hear if you want to unpack that more.
Oh, absolutely. Did I? Oh my God. I was in the DISC model, if anybody knows the DISC model.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I was a turbo D. Be brief, be bright, be gone.
Oh, you nailed me. I've been there my whole life. He's telling me I got to change, you know, I'm like D, I'm D on the outside wall back where Tony Gwynn used to hang out in the Padres when you would take your son to the baseball games. All right. I'm out by the wall, man.
There you go. So yeah. And that was not, you know, that's not going to empower people.
Yeah,
that was true. And when I went back to school in the year 1999, the first class that I did was a class where understand who you are. Because you cannot change anybody and have them be better. You can only change yourself, which will help others be better. So that was a bigger way. You know, I used to walk around for a long time with written on the palm of my hand, praise somebody, because I would forget to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, this is deliberate. You know, I have a little sticky note on my computer here. And who would have thought that a guy who's soon going to be 66 years old was the CEO of a US public company for 25 years, still needs a little sticky note on their computer to remind them of who they want to be. And here's what it says. I ask myself this question: am I being the person I want to be right now? And then I list who is that person. And this is who I want to be. I want to be grateful. I want to be caring. I want to be empathetic. I want to be reasonable. I want to be a listener. I want to be fact-based. I want to have balanced opinions. I want to be curious. I want to be a learner. And I want to throw sunshine, not a shadow.
So Care why Bear do Stare.
Why do I need to have that sticky note on my computer? Because we are just these basic individuals wandering down this pathway of life. And in the bushes are these thieves that run out and grab us. The thieves of short-sightedness, the thieves of ego, the thieves of greed, and they take us in the bushes. And for a minute, we feel good in the bush for some reason. But if we don't remind ourselves of who we want to be, those around us will make us someone we don't want to be. So I have to remind myself. I have it written on my computer. I have a little notebook. Here it is on my notebook, because that's my best self. That's when I feel my best.
And you care and you're willing and you're committed to getting to that point. And so my follow-up to this is, so you hard D on the DISC assessment, you've been working to take some of the qualities of the D that can turn people off and alter those. Have you since taken the DISC assessment, and has that changed at all? And yeah, please give us feedback on that.
Yeah, I'm an ID now. I had to get the balance between being tough-minded and tender-hearted.
And the DISC stands for dominant, not dick, everybody, because you might think like it's dominant, right?
So if you think what an I is, a turbo I is late for meetings because they're building relationships along the way. So you don't want to be a turbo I, and you don't want to be a turbo D. So good leadership is a balance between being tough-minded, the turbo D, and tender-hearted, the turbo I. Where's the genius? The genius is in the and, in the middle. And that's where we need to be deliberate and need to think about all the time. How do I get in the middle of being both caring and candid? That's where it is. And you have to bring yourself back to that all the time, because we have to remind ourselves.
Isn't that why it's difficult being a leader? You're talking about two different ends of the spectrum, and then you're trying to balance both and trying to get both. Isn't that why it's difficult for a lot of us?
Absolutely. You know, of course it is. You know, no good... Gino, no good deed goes unpunished as a leader. Remember that. No good deed goes unpunished.
It's a second order consequences that kill me so many times, because we're trying to do good things. And then if you don't think seven steps down the road, sometimes there's these second order consequences that'll kill you.
Absolutely. I mean, it's tough, but it's so gratifying in that when you think that you can create a culture. You know, when I went to school back in Australia in my science class, right? My science teacher gave me a Petri dish, and the science teacher said, we're going to grow culture in this Petri dish. This is a true story. I said, well, okay, fine. What do we need? You need the ingredients. Okay, so what are the ingredients you have to put in this Petri dish to grow culture, whatever the culture was? Now, if you think about growing culture in an organization, what are the ingredients? Do you have a clear set of values that protect and set people free? Do you have a compelling purpose? Can you create a place of belonging? Are you prepared to be tough-minded and tender-hearted? Do you make sure you don't protect your own comfort at the expense of someone else's growth? You put all this stuff in the Petri dish. So what do you need to do next? The science teacher said, you've got to watch that Petri dish every day. And you've got to be, you've got to love your people enough to reward them and applaud them for doing good work, which is enriching the good things in the Petri dish. And here's the rub. You've got to be brave enough to make sure that when toxins get in that Petri dish, you either treat them or get them out real quickly. The problem with most leaders are they don't do both of those very well. They don't reward and applaud their people and feed the good stuff. And most of them are not brave enough to either take the steps to redirect the behavior that's creating bad toxins or to extract it from the Petri dish.
Wow. Let me sit and reflect on that for a second, because that's happened to me in the last several months, and it's I just got punched in the stomach, Jake. You ever feel like that way? You just like, you hear the truth and it's like, wow, okay. And
Gary just told me I need to change who I am as a person. Yeah, I get it.
you can be better, Jake. You can be better.
Of course. That's what I'm doing here. Okay. That's exactly what I'm doing here. I'm trying to get better every day, a little bit with your assistance, Gary.
Gary.
It's just scar tissue that I'm sharing. You know, here's a statement. It'll blow your head off. I have never made a mistake in my life.
They're all opportunities.
No, they're learning moments.
Yeah.
One of the things that paralyzes people in business is fear. So why do we amplify this word mistake and failure? Let's get rid of it. What we have to have is learning moments. And what's the definition of a learning moment in an organization? A positive or negative outcome of any situation that needs to be openly and freely shared to benefit all people. So I haven't made any mistakes, but I have millions of learning moments and I have lots of scar tissue. So what's the use of having all that if you don't put it to work to help others?
I love that. Last question before we go to the personal growth. If you could touch on real quick the four pillars of a fearless tribe. And for everybody, these four pillars are care, candor, accountability, and responsibility.
Yeah. So care means, as a leader, I love my people enough to not only reward them and applaud them, but to redirect them when I need to. So it's, you know, am I there for the candor is no lying, no faking, no hiding. I believe most people don't lie. I believe they fake and hide. Why do they fake and hide? They fake and hide because they're afraid of whatever consequences there are for, instead of having a learning moment, making a mistake. Care, can, accountability. We have something we call the maniac pledge. Accountability is, what do you expect from me and what do I expect from you? Most people let people down because there's not a clear expectation of what we expect from each other. Mm. That's what Ken Blanchard and I wrote about in the book of helping people get an A. How do you get an A if you don't know what an A looks like if it walks in the room? And then responsibility, we have a thing that we created years ago called the maniac pledge. Let me read it to you because it's beautiful. I am responsible for taking actions, asking questions, getting answers, and making decisions. I won't wait for someone to tell me. If I need to know, I am responsible for asking. I have no right to be offended that I didn't get this sooner. And if I am doing something others should know about, I am responsible for telling them. That's our pledge of responsibility.
Responsibility Junkie 101. I love that. That is fantastic. Oh, man. All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Get involved in multifamily, this is where you need to be.
The team you've built is incredible.
There is no egos here. Everyone is always looking to help the other person.
All right, we're back. Now, I told you my number one use for WD-40, and that was for the bicycle chain, starting out, and then it's like Frank's Red Hot. We put that shit on everything in my house, okay? We use it everywhere. What is your number one use? If you as the leader and the head had to position WD-40, this is the number one place to use it. What would that be?
I'm in Australia. That has to be to shine the stainless steel lid on my barbecue.
That's it. Yeah, see, I didn't even know people used it for things like that.
Oh, I have the best looking barbecue in San Diego. If you want to protect the stainless steel hood of your barbecue, little WD-40 on the rag, clean it off. It'll shine like beauty. Any rain gets on it, it runs off. It's absolutely the thing to do. So, you know, cleans and it's protecting and restoring your stainless steel is one. Now, there's millions of other uses. You know, I could, from removing a python snake in the exhaust pipe of a bus in Hong Kong to a lady spraying it on the stem of a bird feeder in the Midwest so the squirrels can't run up the bird feeder and eat the bird.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, and then there's a really weird one. There was a naked burglar stuck in an air conditioning duct trying to break into a bank, and they sprayed some WD-40 on the air conditioning duct and slipped
he
out.
Slid, he slid right out, didn't he?
He got him right out, yeah.
Awesome. All right, you touched on servant leadership before. Could you define that for us or put it in your own words?
Servant leadership is about you as the leader serving those that you want to help get an A. So, you know, if you think about servant leadership, the beginning of servant leadership, it's a bit like a triangle. At the beginning of the process, the leader's on the top. And what's the leader's responsibility? Leader's responsibility is to make sure that there's a clear and compelling purpose, that we have a set of values, that we understand where we want to go as an organization, that we have a clearly defined strategy, and we understand what good execution looks like, and that we have the resources and the needs to make that happen. That's at the beginning. So what happens when you've done that? You turn the pyramid upside down and the leader goes to the bottom. And the leader's job now is to help those, cheer those people on, and to help equip them to achieve those outcomes. So it's the opposite to being a micromanager. If you think about a great
cheerleader,
there's, you know, a coach, a cheerleader, it's more like a coach. If we think about a great coach, what are the behaviors of a great coach? Number one, the great coach never runs on the field and goes and kicks the ball. The great coach spends a lot of time on the sideline observing the play. What's the other thing that a great great coach does. They spend a lot of time in the locker room. Why? They're building the culture in the organization. What's the responsibility of the coach? To know what an A looks like for the player and to give that player feedback around how they can better achieve that A. And the person they're coaching needs to hear that feedback and also understand that occasionally we might ask the other players how they're playing, and we might even ask people in the bleachers what they think of the game. So that's really, you know, that whole continuum of servant leadership. It's providing and coaching.
And you know those fans are going to have an opinion. So you got to get that feedback.
You got to listen to the bleachers.
Yeah. You know. Some of your best practices to get people that feeling of belonging.
Ask some simple questions. Like, here's a simple one. How are you? What's on your mind? How many times have people walked into an organization just asking, hey, Jake, how are you? Everything okay? What's on your mind? I mean, treating people with respect and dignity. Everybody has a place. So respect that.
It's funny because you were talking about the notes on your computer. I literally have notes sitting right next to me to remind myself to listen more and ask what else.
There you go. You can see me right now, right? Yeah. You think I don't need help? Look at these notes.
It's the same thing, though, but it's because it's not intuitive or it's not embedded into me yet. And so I need those constant reminders to slow down and say, what else? And listen.
What else?
And not just because, look, we've had people that, and coaches and things, you know, take us to the mat on it where, yeah, I have my flaws where it's easier for me to sit back, dictate and say, do this. Here's what it is. Give me your problem. I'll give you the answer. We got to get away from that. That was definitely one of my struggles as a leader, to sit back, listen more, take in the feedback. And what do you think? How do you think we should handle this? What else?
Yeah. And
that's hard, though. That's hard.
This is simple. It's not easy.
Yeah.
And time is not your friend.
Yeah.
It's simple, not easy, and time is not your friend. So congratulations for having that post-it note there. That the best thing you can have is these reminders of, you know, am I being the person I want to be right now? Is this my best self? Or am I letting those thieves take me where I don't want to go?
Yeah, because that's not my natural instinctual mode. So it takes that. That's where the growth happens. All right, and then any best practices that you use at your company to feed and reward your people. I love to hear any examples there.
Well, firstly, is it clear what success looks like? You know, again, this comes back to the pillar of accountability and expectation. So, you know. Imagine if you were going on a field to play a game of football or whatever, and you didn't know when the game was going to end. So what would happen? People would run on enthusiastically and they'd be having a lot of fun. But if they didn't know when the game was going to end, when the whistle was going to blow, when the score was going to be declared, what would you end up with? A lot of people running around and at the end, a very tired team. So number one is, do we know what an A looks like? Helping people win at work is about helping people get A's, but the most important thing is, do we know what we want to achieve together? And then how do we
setting clear priorities and then giving feedback when on a personal level, I see the post-it notes everywhere and the reminders. How do you stay organized and plan your weeks out?
I'm a pretty organized sort of person. I have a lot of post-it notes, obviously, but, it's what's my why? Why do I get up every day? So I have a why. I have the most amazing life in the world. I wake up every morning to help people create positive, lasting memories. The most exciting part of that is finding all the ways to do it. So I think the discipline of saying what's important and what's not important, what am I going to, I'm not going to do anything that's not meaningful to me. And meaningful to me means what I do helps others and is important in my life. So you've got to be disciplined. You can't say yes to everything. You've got to say no. So that's really what's important.
Last question for me. Can anyone actually throw a boomerang and have it come back to them? And what's the missing ingredient? Did I just miss the WD-40 on it? Or why do they never come back to me? I'm just let down constantly with these things.
Well, you've probably never been trained to throw a boomerang.
I just thought it was a myth because I had those things all throughout my childhood. I don't know where the hell they came from, but I would throw them and they would just keep going. Just like the baseball. They would not come
back. I've watched some great people in Australia throw boomerangs and they certainly come back.
What is the purpose of the boomerang though? Is it to knock guys out? Because clearly once it hits them, it's not coming back to you. So is it just so you get multiple throws with
it? Yeah, well, if you miss, it comes back, right? So you get a second chance. It's all about life.
Okay.
The boomerang is the tool of second chance.
The second chance dart. I got it. Okay. Yeah. I'm understanding a little more. But is the purpose, so you're out there with a boomerang and you see a bad guy who's about to get stuck in the air duct and you have to pull him out some WD-40. Before he does it, you hit him with the boomerang and knock him down. That's the purpose? Is that correct or no?
Well, thousands of years ago, it was the hunting tool of the Indigenous Australians. So if they wanted to, you know, capture whatever it was they wanted to eat for dinner, they would use the boomerang as part of that tool of stunning, whatever that is.
I just can't see it. I think I'd be better off with a spear, Gino, but that's just me. So, all right, Gino, take us home here.
I'd love to wrap up Gary's, I guess, journey from working in Sydney, Australia as a licensee. And then, you know, the licensee's up and he decides to actually uproot himself and come to the United States with his family. His family must have thought he was crazy. And in his own words, he was scared, but he wasn't afraid. And he does what most leaders do, and living through his motto, Ancora Imparo. That's an important motto, everybody. Learning as I always am. Always learning. Having that growth mindset and being able to say that I am a D, not a dick, but a D, like Jake. And he needs to be more of an I. So how do I blend both of those together? And being able to get uncomfortable in life, I think, is one of the other mottos that Gary's lived by just consistently disrupting himself and saying, how do I take it to the next level and how do I learn? But it always comes back to that education, Jake, times action. I mean, Gary needed the education, he needed to go back. He understood that, you know, the ego was there and he had to sort of disrupt that ego and learn. But the education times the action, I think, ultimately led him to take, you know, WD-40 from a small company to where now 80% of sales are outside the US, which is an amazing thing. If you think of turnaround or growth of the company, and if you put $100 back in 1998 in WD-40, you'd have over $1,700 today. So a testament to the growth and the consistent growth of the company over the last 25 years.
And more importantly, 97% of the people at the company say they love to tell people they work there.
I missed that. 90. Sorry.
It's a cool 90. Product and a great organization and culture, clearly.
Yeah.
Gary, where can we get the book? I forgot to ask you that.
Amazon. You can go on Amazon. That's Helping People Win at Work. The other one that I published was The Unexpected Learning Moment, just recently, Leadership Lessons, Leading a Company Through COVID, which talks about, you know, firstly, the foundation that we had in place, which is what really helped us thrive through that period. The foundation of culture, and then what did we learn through that, and how we're going to put that learning to work going forward.
What he did not tell you was the hand sanitizer did not work, but the WD-40 did in preventing COVID. So I'm saying that he's not. Gang, get the book. It's an excellent read. As always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's G Daddy. We make it happen. We'll see you next time. Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, Gary. Cheers.